X2, number 3B.
All right. You know what it says? It says, in the classical logic, we have a subject, and that subject produces intelligent actions. We think, and therefore we reason, and we can produce intelligent products, actions. But it says, in the cybernetic system, we see that such a system can produce intelligence without a living, intelligent subject. In other words, there is an intelligence independent on people, independent of people. And that intelligence, independent of people, can even produce the actions and the effects of intelligence that is much higher than the human intelligence. And so he suddenly sees that there are two kinds of intelligence. One is the intelligence of the subject, of the thinking subject, and one is an intelligence that is independent of the thinking subject and yet does not belong to the object either, because a cybernetic system like a thermostat has no brain. The thermostat itself is produced out of iron, and that iron has no intelligence in itself, and yet iron put together such that it is a thermostat produces the actions of intelligence. Without that, there has to be a man there to control it. So cybernetic system act just like a subjective, just like a reflecting subject. Can you see that? Therefore, they can store data in a memory. They can have a memory without the brain in it. They can forget things. You can make them forget things. Cybernetic systems can learn. They can even teach. They can maintain something which is very, very difficult. They can maintain an equilibrium in a system in spite of constant outward influence, disturbing influence. A cybernetic system can just stay in one terrific, clear equilibrium, though it is constantly under the impact of disturbing factors. It has therefore the intelligence to regulate that system so that the disturbance factors have no influence on the equilibrium of the system. This is a very high state of intelligence. And yet, there is no human brain there to do it. You just take, as an example, a thermostat, because that's what you know perhaps best. You know, a thermostat, you have built it in your home, and you want your home be always at the same temperature, say at 70 degrees. You put it at 70 degrees, and then you let that cybernetic system operate. Nobody needs to be in the house. No human brain needs to be in the house. No human intelligence needs to be around there. You just can let it stay there, and for over weeks and months, that cybernetic system produces a very high degree of intelligence and watchfulness and awareness, because every time the temperature just wants to drop a little bit below 70, it begins to act differently and begins to heat again. And the moment it goes just a little bit above 70, it stops and says, let's do something else. And it stops again. And so this keeps the temperature at equilibrium. In earlier times, when one didn't see and know the cybernetic system, you had to have a man sitting there and watching constantly the thermometer and see, is it below 70, is it above 70? And according to that, he would have to run to the furnace and put on the furnace or put out the furnace. Now you can take away subjective thinking and eliminate that, and yet the system is governed just as well, I would say much better. Can you see that therefore they must realize that there is information intelligence there, an intelligence, a subjective intelligence, which has nothing to do neither with the gadget itself, that is iron, has no intelligence, nor has it to do with a human subjective intelligence, because no one is there. Therefore you have a third value. This third value, called information, he considers to be a new metaphysical component. A third metaphysical component. It is an intelligent process producing information without a thinking subject. Isn't it terrific? And can you see that somehow they begin to see that intelligence is something which is not restricted to the thinking, to the brain, that there can be intelligence without the brain? Here they see it first in a cybernetic system. He calls that information, that third value, a reflex process independent of the thinking subject. He calls it a self-consciousness independent of the human brain. You begin to hear terms which we use, but he uses them now impersonally, away from a person. He says this information, therefore, is a reconciling factor between irreconcilable opposites. Subject and object become their one. But he also says, this is interesting, that information represents a higher level of reflex consciousness. Can you see now? He does the same what we did this morning, that we said, here is fact and counterfeit. And in order to see what is fact and what is counterfeit, we have to have a higher level, a third value, understanding, which determines what is fact, what is counterfeit. Here too, in a way, he sees here is subject, object on the same level, but now in the cybernetic system he has a higher, and he draws that triangle, so to say, a higher form of intelligence, of subjectivity, namely information, and that information holds both subject and object in its grasp, therefore makes it one. So in information we can no more distinguish between subject and object. It's just information. Therefore he too says that in that reflex process, actually, subject and objects become irrelevant, just as our two-valued conceptual logic has become irrelevant when we have understanding. So that actually, again, his third value becomes his one value. Okay, for instance, he states that in a information, that an information process is guided by an infinitely regulating principle which neither belongs to the object nor to the subject. Yes? That the information process is guided by an infinitely regulating principle which neither belongs to the object nor to the subject. He is naturally aware of something, that this does away with man. It kills, it wipes out man, the mortal. If information is that process which has nothing to do with subject and object in the old classical sense, then naturally we don't need men. He's out. And you know very well that therefore evolution could go on without the help of men. He's only a wrongly programmed appearing in that cybernetic ontological system, and therefore he came and may go just as he came. Yes. What are the consequences of this? What are the consequences? And I just enumerate a few consequences when we see that object and subject are actually one, but one where? In information. Information with us always stands for understanding, for spiritual understanding. Huh? The consequences are that classical logic is inadequate. Is inadequate. That cybernetic logic works with a third value. That therefore information is an independent existence of a self-consciousness. Terrific. Is an independent existence of a self-consciousness. Can you feel a little bit how the whole world is being laid down, how the whole world disappears and the spiritual principle is taking over with the same or a bigger amount of intelligence and faculty for intelligence. Again, this is interesting, it says, therefore this new logic does not give a solution for the dualistic logic. It's important, you see, it does, this new paradigm give a better solution for the old paradigm. It gives a new paradigm and therefore is asking new questions and giving new answers. So we should not always compare the new paradigm with the old and say, is the new better than the old? It isn't better than the old, it's different. It's something else. He goes on and says, that it makes the dualistic logic irrelevant, obsolete, shows further that human consciousness is inadequate. See? As he said, he would say it's a limited concept. That human beliefs and human reasoning is a limited concept, not an unlimited concept. But he also says that it demands a new language. Because our language, as we have seen, is built on dualistic thinking. And suddenly we should have a language that is adapted to a monistic consciousness. Therefore a language which does not constantly reason in fact and counterfeits, but only in a language which does only reason in the oneness and has no counterfeits, nor counterfacts. Actually, as I said, the forerunner of this logic was Hegel, and Hegel tried already to point out to this one-valued being. He had those terms of the world mind, of the world, I don't know how it is translated in English, the world spirit. In German it's the Weltgemüt, the world mind. Lifting up, he had an absolute reason. He was speaking about the absolute reason, no more of the human reason. He was trying to find his way, and therefore we must not be surprised that many feel that Mrs. Eddy must have known Hegel's works and that she has borrowed a lot from Hegel's work. There is a great controversy going on in the Christian in the field. That there is a so-called Lieber document, where they want to prove that Mrs. Eddy has taken everything from Hegel. Actually, that document was falsified, and I don't think that Mrs. Eddy did read Hegel, because I don't think at that time much was translated into English of his work. But you can see why, because he was already approaching this third value, and naturally Mrs. Eddy then showed it. He speaks therefore of the total reflex, and no more of pure thinking, that pure thinking has to give way to something much higher, to pure reflex. Can you always somehow hear he's pointing to the one mind, huh? Mind knowing itself. He says, this will revolutionize our whole way of thinking. That's quite clear, huh? But in order to do that, he says, it demands a fundamental change in the present human structure of consciousness. Isn't it terrific? We always say we need a new frame of reference. And we need that new frame of reference in order to culture a new structure consciousness. He says it demands a completely new metaphysical image of the world. It enforces a radical new awareness, that is, awareness of the One. It imparts, that's very nice, it imparts a new world feeling. He uses that term, feeling, a new world feeling. And I think at that point when I was telling you what is that third value, you may not have got hold of it through intelligence, but through a feeling. Anyway, that's the way I got it, huh? To see, isn't it terrific that we have been living all our life and through centuries in a culture that has accepted as absolutely, as a solid basis, that there is a thinking subject called man with a brain who can think, and then there are a lot of objects around us that cannot think. And we would never have thought that there would be a third in the whole play, that a third factor would have the hand in it, that there existed a third, namely information, which says, I can do the job you are doing. Just go and go fishing. I look after the business, you know. You can go and I see that the temperature at home is just always 70 degrees and you can come home whenever you like, be it morning, noon or night, it will be nicely warm, 70 degrees. It says, I am an intelligence that takes care of everything that replaces your intelligence. Does that give a new world feeling? To feel here, right now where we are, from the two valid logic we were thinking, here are the subject sitting around and an object all around, and feeling in this room, right where we are, is a third one. It's an information here. We may not have tapped it, but it's there. It's just like before one knew anything about steam power or electric power, where people only had their muscles and the muscles of the animals to produce power. If those people would have been sitting here in this room and would be discussing about how can we tap more power, they would have said, well, we have to have more horses, or we would have to have produce a whole group of slaves, and then we have more power. They have muscles, huh? And if you would have said, you know, there is a lot of power here which you can't see, and that power is about a million times bigger than your power which you have in your muscles, they would have said, now he's ripe for somewhere else, huh? For an insane asylum or something like that. You see? That power was always there. But as long as one does not realize it, one cannot tap it, cannot use it. And in the same way, there is a mind here, that is not our mind, the one mind. And to think that that one mind performs the action of intelligence, produces the effect of intelligence, and we can't see it, it gives a new world feeling. The point is that at present we have not developed that world feeling enough, that there is a mind, capital M, that will take care of everything that we do and so on, and says, you just be quiet, I'm doing everything for you. Don't bother. I keep everything in an equilibrium. for you. I regulate with my system everything. The moment a disturbance factor comes in that says I'm influenza or I'm lack or anything, I will take care of that. I'm a regulating system that will regulate it for you. For you, if we know about that information center. We know about mine. Can you see that it will give a new world feeling when we touch that third value? Naturally, we must also be clear that this cybernetics has not brought about or produced this mutation that has taken place. It's the other way around. It has only made us conscious that it has always existed. And the moment one began to see those cybernetic systems, naturally one began to become aware that they existed since time immemorial, that they were always there, that the whole body which we have is nothing else but a few hundred cybernetic systems, therefore a few hundred self-regulating systems working together into one even bigger cybernetic system. We don't have to think that our blood pressure is always the same. We don't have to think that our blood temperature, body temperature, is always the same. But there is a constantly, at every split second, the cybernetic system at work that keeps the body temperature just right there. And every little variation is noticed, and therefore counteraction is set in to keep the homeostasis of the system intact. We can go out into the cold and we can go into the hot. The cybernetic system begins to eliminate those disturbance factors and keep always the body temperature at even level. And so it is with everything. The whole body is a terrific big factory, so to say, with one big computer. And that big computer has about 100 or 150 other computers. Everyone computer a cybernetic system, keeping really the homeostasis of the body intact. This is only a symbol. If that is so, if we see the symbol, there must be an idea behind the symbol. The idea is first. So in being there must be that cybernetic idea which runs on that value of information. So we can see that though cybernetic mechanisms and organisms by themselves have no consciousness, still information produces with them the faculties of consciousness. Therefore, consciousness is no more limited to man. Therefore, we can see why more and more also anthropologists speak more and more that there must be a supra-consciousness, a consciousness that is above man, not a super-consciousness, a super-consciousness, but a supra-consciousness. And therefore, consciousness is no more limited to man, and therefore you can see that the historical concept of man is being resolved. Man can go out of the picture, doesn't matter. Because man belongs to that lower level of object and subject, which now has become irrelevant. The moment we see the higher value, which is information, so really information resolves the concept and the fact of what has been called matter, because object and subject are out. So information takes the place of matter. Just as in divine metaphysics, Mrs. Eddy says, that things are resolved into thought and the objects of sense are exchanged for ideas of soul. So we can see all that is left over is information, one value. One value. So in this way, also cybernetics is on the way showing the way out from the two-valued logic and pointing to the one-valued logic. Yes, that's that. We make a break here.